tonight's program. We have all sorts of fun and frivolity scheduled for you tonight. Might as well start with the most fun, it's 7 past the hour, the most fun item we found today. It involves Donald Trump's Miss USA pageant. You heard who won, right? According to the AP, Arab Americans rejoiced Monday over the crowning of raven-haired beauty Rima Faki, a 24-year-old Lebanese immigrant from Michigan. You mean immigrant from Lebanon, who lives in Michigan. Arab Americans call it a victory for diversity in the United States, especially at a time when Arabs suffer from negative stereotypes in this country, and anti-immigrant sentiment is in the news. You gotta love it, huh? Meanwhile, some harsh critics wondered if Trump's Miss USA organization was trying to send a message, sniping that the victory amounted to affirmative action. These people are out of their goddamn minds, Kathy. They're crazy. They're crazy. Or implying that the first runner-up, Miss Oklahoma USA, suffered unfairly because of an answer she gave supporting Arizona's new immigration law. I mean, you know what she was asked? She was asked about it. It's Morgan Elizabeth Woolard of Oklahoma. She was asked a question by actor Oscar Nunez of NBC's The Office about Arizona's new immigration law. And she said she supported the law, which requires police enforcing another law to verify a person's immigration status if there's, quote, reasonable suspicion, end quote, that the person's in the country illegally. Miss Oklahoma said, I'm a huge believer in states' rights. I think that's what's so wonderful about America. So I think it's perfectly fine for Arizona to create that law. Did someone not prep this woman that states' rights was all about slavery? That's why we had a civil war in this country? Jesus God, where did these broads come from? Conservative bloggers like Michelle Malkin suggested the question was a trap. The pageant's judges, who included skater Johnny Weir and NBA star Carmelo Anthony, were unavailable for comment Monday, as was Trump, whose office said he was too busy to speak about the pageant. It was a trap! They asked her a trick question! That's the only time you will ever hear me talk about a Miss USA pageant or any beauty pageant on this program. Thank you and good night. Hey, how about Pat Buchanan? You know, we've referred to him many times as an unreconstructed anti-Semite, which he is. He's a Catholic fascist. He's an anti-Semite. In a different time, Pat Buchanan would proudly wear his white robe with the pointy hood. And I mean, he can be funny. And you kind of see him on MSNBC as being harmless, because he cut such a comical figure. But I swear to God, under different circumstances, Pat Buchanan could be a real, threat to national security or to the stability of the country. In a different time and place, he would have been in the Nazi high command. There's no doubt. But he is now saying that there are too many Jews on the U.S. Supreme Court. both of them. He is lamenting the absence of Protestants. Now, Pat Buchanan is one of these Opus Dei Catholics who would like to see every Protestant burned at the stake. So for him to lament the absence of Protestants is such a fraud. What he's talking about is his gut-level contempt and disgust for two Jews on the Supreme Court, if Kagan is confirmed. He had a column that he wrote for one of these right-wing toilet websites, and he suggested that if Elena Kagan is confirmed, there will be a disproportionately large number of Jews on the Supreme Court. In his column for WorldNet Daily, which is the sewer on the web, WorldNet Daily is just, I don't know, somebody should flush it because it is just full of huge things, you know, WorldNet Daily. Anyway, he lamented the fact, Buchanan did, that since 1965, no Democratic president has nominated a black Supreme Court justice. Oh, well then. And he said that, quote, if Kagan is confirmed, Jews, who represent less than 2% of the U.S. population, will have 33% of the Supreme Court seats, end quote. That's Buchanan. He said, if, quote, if Kagan is confirmed, the court will consist of 3 Jews and 6 Catholics, but not a single Protestant, though Protestants remain half the nation and our founding faith. Which, as far as founding faith, Pat, when are you going to give that crap up? We did not have a founding faith. Oh, Jesus, it just, I don't know. But anyway, the column for The Toilet, WorldNet Daily, elicited numerous angry responses. Abe Foxman, who is always quick to see anti-Semitism even where it doesn't exist, in this case it probably does, but Foxman, Anti-Defamation League, issued a statement saying that Pat, quote, Pat Buchanan is a recidivist anti-Semite who never misses an opportunity to show his fangs. So, what's the takeaway from this? Pat Buchanan wants quotas! He wants quotas on the Supreme Court. What about the Bakke case, Pat, that said quotas are not legal? Don't you remember that? Don't you remember how you backed that case, Pat Buchanan? So now he wants quotas. He wants more Protestants, less Jews. How about a couple of blacks? How about illegal immigrants? Would you like one of those up there, Pat? You twisted old bastard, you. I swear to God, Pat Buchanan, somebody ought to put this guy out to pasture. Just put him out to pasture. My God, what a jerk. But the part that is always so hysterical with these guys is the fact that when it's their ox being gored, all of a sudden they want all the things that liberals, they accuse the liberals of having done, like quota systems and all this other crap, right? Jesus. So Pat Buchanan, worried about the Jews. There needs to be more Protestants. What about Catholics, Pat? Are there too many Catholics? They have 67%, Pat. 67% of the Supreme Court are Catholics. Is that fair? Are 67% of the residents of the United States Catholic? If not, then we should fire some of those Catholics, right? Oh, my God. This guy cracks me up. All right, we have a break coming up. Oh, and by the way, yeah, Michael in Roswell points out, if Buchanan's logic were to be followed, there should be 5 women on the court and 4 men, because women represent a majority of the population. Ah, now wouldn't that send him into hysterics? Oh, my God, this guy. I swear to God. Oh, well, Pat Buchanan. All right, we're going to take a break. We will be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. We're going to take a break.
America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I don't know if you watched 60 Minutes on Sunday, but there was a segment where it was revealed, with no question here, who is responsible for this horrific disaster in the Gulf and the fact that 11 people are dead. Apparently, the what was the company, Transocean, that had was operating the BP rig. Transocean had told BP, we want to put this plug in a certain way in order to make sure that there's no leakage, no explosion, no disaster. And because remember, this well was not ready to go online. They were not ready to pump oil out of there at all. They had dug it. They had found what they were looking for, oil. And then they decided to cap it and come back later. So Transocean wanted to use their standard sealing process of mud and a concrete cap and so on and so forth. Now, it all sounds very simplistic and like something that happened in somebody's backyard with a bunch of 8-year-olds playing, but it's not. The mud they're talking about are tens of thousands of pounds of this stuff at a certain PSI pushed down into this well in order to stop the back pressure coming up of the oil. And then it's all crowned with a huge concrete cap. And even that's making it too simplistic. But you get the idea. BP said, no, don't do that. And it turns out that the reason they said no is because they want to be able to get back to the oil without a whole lot of hassle. They wanted it as easy as possible to get back to the oil when it came time to open this thing and start bringing it up. So Transocean said, this is not the way we do it. BP said, that's the way you're going to do it here because we're paying the bills. So Transocean did it their way, and within hours, the thing exploded. 11 people are dead. The worst environmental disaster from oil in the history of this country is developing. Now, shouldn't BP executives be put on trial for murder? And I don't know if Louisiana, I don't know. I guess they're out in international, not international waters there, but in American waters. I don't know. Do we still have the death penalty, federal death penalty? Yeah, we do, because we executed Timothy McVeigh. Shouldn't these guys, these executives, be put on trial for murder? And you can make an argument of premeditated murder, because I'm sure that the scientists and the engineers working for Transocean said, look, if you do this, you're going to have a disaster. People are going to die. Do it. Is that premeditated murder? Shouldn't they be put on trial for murder? And if they are found guilty, shouldn't they be executed? They have committed 11 counts of murder. They have essentially destroyed the economy of 3 and possibly more states. It appears now that this horrendous eruption, this gusher of oil, is now entering the loop current. God only knows what kind of damage is going to do. And these bastards are going to walk free. Nothing will happen. Nothing. But if I walk into a convenience store tomorrow and steal 2 6-packs of beer and I'm caught, my ass will probably go to jail. So when they're talking about this rat bastard from BP was on the early show, I think, on CBS this morning. He was asked about that report on 60 Minutes. And he said, well, you know, we should let the investigation go forward. Since when does the murderer get to dictate the terms of an investigation? I mean, you know, what happens if I go kill somebody? Do I then tell the cops when they show up? No, wait a second. Let me draw the chalk line around the body here. Okay, now, check over there for some blood stains. Now, I've got the weapon here. Let's see. I don't want a ballistic test on it. So, isn't that what BP is doing? Did you hear what this crazy bastard Glenn Beck said at the at the NRA convention. I'll have that for you tonight, too. All right, a break here. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, not yet. Okay, it's not a break, but I am Mike Malloy. I got that part right. I'm looking at the clock, Ron, that's all. You know, every time I start thinking about or talking about what has happened with the Exxon Valdez, fancy that, with BP and Transocean and Halliburton, and just how, what a combination of fury and sadness that I feel about this, I start to lose it. Can we break now? Oh, good. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. The U.S. Coast Guard is considering something here that I find to be just fantastical. I mean fantastical in the sense of, oh my God, oh my double God, oh my triple God. Oh my, all the Hindu gods. I mean, it's that weird. Mississippi River is this huge flush. It's like a toilet. It comes down and flushes out the midsection of the United States. It's loaded with all kinds of pollutants. It's really filthy. But the outflow measures, according to what I have here, the outflow measures between 7,000 and 20,000 cubic meters of water per second as it flows into the Gulf. And therefore, it represents a powerful natural ally of U.S. authorities trying to control what could become the worst oil spill in U.S. history. The Coast Guard has said, quote, the Mississippi River is our best friend because it's pushing and keeping the oil away from the Mississippi Delta. Okay? The Coast Guard said the oil was washing ashore in at least two new locations, Whiskey Island, Louisiana, and Long Beach, Mississippi. A spokesman for the Coast Guard said, quote, we spent crews to assess what type of oil, and we determined it's soft patties on Whiskey Island and tar balls on Long Beach. Oil globs have also washed ashore on barrier islands in Alabama. The appearance of oil in new locations highlights the urgency, it says here, of efforts to contain the spill. Now, in the face of this catastrophe, U.S. authorities have decided to open the locks at some of the canals along the Mississippi River to increase the outflow of water to maintain the oil slick away from Mississippi Delta, because no matter how much crap comes down the Mississippi, it's still an ecologically important and ecologically fragile area. Ecologists and fishermen worry that this decision could backfire at a time when many fish and shellfish have entered their reproductive season. The president of Louisiana Shrimpers Association said, quote, it pushes the juvenile shrimp right into the oil, and we're going to lose them all. So you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. This is what BP has done. This is just another example. The head of the Louisiana Shrimpers Association said the water coming out from the Mississippi was of low purity and untreated. Duh. And he went on to say, because of the flooding in the north, you have chemical products that are on the ground in the communities and go into the Mississippi. And I don't really agree with this decision. If the flow coming down the sewer system of the United States is slow enough, when it hits the Mississippi Delta, it just goes into the dead zone that's out there already, and it doesn't gush out into the areas where the shrimpers rely on the baby shrimp to grow. Baby shrimp. But that's not what the Coast Guard is trying to do. The Coast Guard wants to keep it away from the coast, i.e. Coast Guard. You get it? So another disaster that BP has caused is unfolding now about diverting the Mississippi River to fight this. One of the people with the Gulf Restoration Network warned that the increased flow of Mississippi water was pushing shrimp right into the oil. He said, quote, we would like to have better answers before we proceed with this, better answers about the impact on shrimp, about the impact on oysters, about the impact on the larva. This man said his organization had asked U.S. Environmental Protection Agency some of these questions, but had not received any answers yet. And Paul Horsen, an oil expert for Greenpeace, acknowledged that everybody was working in an unknown situation, but urged caution with any steps that are being taken. The Greenpeace guy said, quote, whether it's injecting dispersants, whether it's spreading booms around, or diverting the Mississippi, everybody tries to see what to do to improve the situation. We must not do any oil spill response techniques that cause further damage to the environment. Well, to the Greenpeace guy, the last thing on BP's mind is the environment. They don't care. Capitalism never cares about the environment, only to the point of how badly or deeply they can scar it and exploit it and tear it to pieces in order to put money in the pockets of their board, their corporate officers, and their top preferred stock shareholders. That's all they care about. Come on. Now, on top of everything else, this is from today.
5 days after appearing before Congress to testify about its responsibility in one of the worst oil spills in U.S. history, the Swiss company that owned and operated the oil rig that sunk into the Mississippi or into the Gulf of Mexico announced that it would shell out $1 billion in dividends to shareholders. The revelation that Transocean is distributing a $1 billion profit to shareholders as one of its drill sites pumps millions of gallons of oil into the sea
is sure to inflame an already smarting debate over offshore drilling and the company's role. See? For you little weasels, you little teabag weasel, tight-ass freaks out there, you conservatives who, you know, you hear me bust up on capitalism. You say, what do you want, socialism? You're goddamn right I do. You betcha I do. This, you morons, you right-wing freaks, Transocean is paying out $1 billion to their shareholders. Now tell me again. How concerned these filthy, money-grubbing, blood-sucking capitalists are about the damage they've done. Never mind. You guys couldn't find your ass with both hands. Let me jump ahead here. Oh, by the way, we mentioned this months ago. I don't know why it's popping up again, but it is. Michelle Bachmann, this fruitcake from, now that gives fruitcakes a bad name. This half-ass, this half-wit, this jerkwad from Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann. The Minnesota Independent has found that Bachmann and Associates, Inc., a Christian mental health clinic founded and run by her husband, Marcus Bachmann, has taken in nearly $30,000 in funding from the Minnesota state government since 2007. Now, this is the same Bachmann screwball who has been screeching about any form of public health insurance plans, calling such ideas socialized medicine, except when it's her turn to step up to the trough. Her and her phony-ass husband, who, by the way, is not an M.D., like Dr. Laura. Dr. Laura. She has a degree in what? Physiology? Yeah. Is she still alive? You don't know? She may have killed herself by now. She let her mother rot and die, or die and rot. And the corpse, her mother's corpse sat in the house for, what, a week before anybody? Then the neighbors started complaining about the stench. Dr. Laura? Yeah. I digress.
My favorite is the one, you know, her son got kicked out of Iraq or something.
Yeah, he got kicked out of the military.
For writing and posting these horrifyingly brutal and sadistic cartoons in which he was depicted as a soldier decapitating Iraqi women and raping them with...
Can you imagine having Dr. Laura as your mother?
Rather have Dick Cheney as my, roommate.
Minnesota has a public health insurance plan called Medical Assistance, through which Bachman and Associates has received almost $30,000 in state payments since 2007. In order to receive state funds for their clinic, Bachman and Associates voluntarily applied and was approved for Rule 29 and Rule 31 licenses. Rule 29 covers certain categories of medical assistance payments. Rule 31 covers paying for chemical dependency programs. You phony-ass broad. Oh, my God, I hate hypocrites. Oh, it's socialized medicine. But there's her handout. You know, just give me as much as I can get. Skank. And Glenn Beck.
Oh, Glenn Beck was at the National Rifle Association's annual meeting in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he stood up in front of the faithful and he said, "Why won't somebody tell us the truth? We're American. We can handle the truth. We demand the truth. And we can understand the truth."
And then, aided by his chalkboard and his twisted circus clown sense of humor, he gave his touch of the truth. It wasn't pretty. I'll share it with you when we come back.
We can handle the truth. Somebody tell us the truth.
Okay, Glenn, I'll tell you the truth. Hurry up and get all the money you can, put it in trust funds for your children, because obviously you are getting closer and closer to the moment when you...
Watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. So anyway, Beck, Glenn Beck, took off his shirt or his coat, rolled up his sleeves, got out his chalkboard, put a little Vicks under his eyes so he could weep on cue, mopped his face with a towel. There he was, National Rifle Association's annual meeting before a huge crowd. And he said, "We can handle the truth. We demand the truth. We can understand the truth." And then he started to give them some truth. He said, quote, "This country will never fail by an outside force." You're right, Glenn. It'll be sons of bitches like you who bring it down because you're a traitor and you hate America. He went on, "This country will only be destroyed if we destroy ourselves." And according to Beck, we're on that path.
Is
every prediction he came up with, he had a solution. And his cheering fans at the arena in Charlotte took hope from the fact that their leader, the Messiah, Glenn Beck, there he is, has an answer for everything. He said, for a preview of America's future, look to Europe's current financial and social problems. Oh, yeah, okay. He said, quote, any of your friends that say it can't happen here, they're wrong. The Titanic is going down. You're telling me we can't build a better ship? We have a great plan. It's called the Constitution. Churches are emptying out because they don't stand for anything anymore. God understands individual rights. He's the creator of them. This is Glenn Beck. This guy is really... Let's talk about a well-regulated militia and why you might need one. Because the government's not doing its job. That's right. If the government were doing its job, Glenn, they would come out with a huge net and grab your ass and put you in a federal psychiatric facility forever. And then he said his warnings are not about parties, but the size of government. Yeah. Beck placed blame for his dystopian American vision on the Obama administration. It's Obama's fault. Yeah. And urged the audience to take the fight to the polls. He said, these are not Democrats. They're revolutionary Marxists. We need to get rid of the Marxists. Oh, really? Other speakers were Newt Gingrich, who was there to whore for his new book, No Offense to Sex Workers. His new book is titled To Save America, Stopping Obama's Secular Socialist Machine. These people are crazy. They've lost their minds. They're completely unhinged. Newt Gingrich, who went after Bill Clinton because Bill Clinton was stupid, sort of, not really, an intern, if that's what she was, if she wasn't a spy for Mossad. And Gingrich was really stupid, an intern at the time. Oh, well. To save America, stop it. Oh, and another guest appearance or a guest speaker there was the real psychopath, this guy who eats his own boogers, Ted Nugent, who was there picking huge boogers out of his nose and eating them, because that's what Ted Nugent does. Oh, my God, these people. I'll tell you, it's getting crazy. I've got a little piece of sound from Cy Hirsch here. Do we have time to do this now? We do. I want you to listen. This is Cy Hirsch, a veteran investigative journalist who initially, years ago, broke the My Lai story and the tortured prisoners of Abu Ghraib and other things. He was speaking to an audience at the Global Investigative Journalism Conference in Geneva, Switzerland, the week of April 22nd. Listen to this.
And I'll tell you right now, one of the great tragedies of my country is that Mr. Obama is looking the other way because equally horrible things are happening to prisoners, I mean, to those we capture in Afghanistan. They're being executed in the battlefield. It's unbelievable stuff going on there that doesn't necessarily get reported. And things don't change. What they've done in the field now is they tell the troops, you have to make a determination within a day or two or so whether or not the prisoners you have, the detainees, are Taliban. And you must extract whatever tactical intelligence you can get, as opposed to strategic long-range intelligence, immediately. And if you cannot conclude they're Taliban, you must turn them free. What it means is, and this I've been told this anecdotally by five or six different people, battlefield executions are taking place. What if they can't prove they're Taliban, bam. If we don't do it ourselves, we turn them over to the nearby Afghan troops, and by the time we walk 3 feet, the bullets are flying. And that's going on now.
Battlefield executions of people who cannot, because of language or whatever, cannot convince the American soldiers who have taken them prisoner that they are not Taliban. And if they cannot, they're executed on the spot. either by our, what do we refer to them as, our heroes. Somebody please tell me, what is heroic about invading a country, capturing people? Are the Taliban scum? No more or less than Catholic priests? No more or less. They're all scum. Invading a country, deciding that the real enemy are the Catholic, I'm sorry, the Taliban, the religious psychopaths of Taliban, and then you start killing people, guilty and innocent, you determine that. And if you catch somebody who's fighting back to keep you out of their country, you arrest them, you hold them in a battlefield situation, you give them a day or two to prove they're not Taliban, and if they can't, you execute them on the spot. This is called heroism. It is 7 past the hour, and I have just been informed that at the NRA convention in Charlotte, North Carolina over the weekend, no one was allowed to carry a loaded gun into the convention. You phony bastards. You crybaby, phony, gutless, right-wing bastards. Oh, it's okay to carry a gun into a church or a bar or a school or a PTA meeting, but woo! Not to the NRA convention, because we're such cowards. One of us might pull out a gun and shoot ourselves. Or maybe they were afraid that somebody would pull out a gun and shoot Beck. That's probably the case. Welcome back, 7 past the hour, 8 past the hour. This is a Malloy program. Loaded guns were not allowed. What? Loaded guns not allowed in the NRA convention but in Charlotte.
They're fine with taking them into Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, sure.
The First Baptist Church.
Sure. Or where they can strut around with their penis extensions and say, I've got a gun on my hip. I'm big man. But when you get all these cowardly little weasels together, they're terrified that, you know, I'm sure that was also probably in Beck's contract. I'll come and speak, but no guns. Because Beck, like all of these people, is essentially a complete full-blown coward. He's a crybaby. He's a coward. He's a sick bastard. Scott says, I have a conspiracy theory answer to the corporate media fascist accusation that Team Obama intentionally sabotaged the oil rig off the Gulf Coast to get us out of offshore drilling. Here's his answer. British Petroleum and other oil companies intentionally sabotaged the oil rig to permanently destroy the Gulf Coast and remove protecting the environment as an obstacle to limitless offshore drilling permits. I could imagine their line, quote, "Well, since the Gulf is ruined anyway, let's drill to get the oil," end quote. I don't know, Scott. I mean, there's some sick bastards, but, oh, you're probably right. Now, tomorrow is going to be a very interesting day. Oh, by the way, please go to 350.org, 350.org. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, and I meant to mention it again. And if you don't know what the 350 stands for, it stands for 350 parts per million, but you've got to go to 350.org, 350.org. Would you do that? Just go there and look around. You will... you'll be the better person for it. 350.org. In the Nation, who wrote this? Was this David Corn? No, this wasn't David Corn. Who was this? This was, John Nichols, who, I love this. Just the first part of this, Cheney has broken the, former Veep protocol by elbowing an endorsement into the May 18th, tomorrow, Republican Kentucky Senate primary between Secretary of State Trey Grayson and Rand Paul, Dr. Rand Paul, the son of Texas Congressman Ron Paul. Now, Trey Grayson is the one that the Republican crazy people have picked. Crazy people, I mean, like Mitch McConnell and the rest of the Republican leadership. They want Trey Grayson. But Rand Paul, see, this is another one of these teabaggers that I hope wins. I really do hope this guy wins for a number of reasons. First of all, because it'll help destroy the Republican Party. And secondly, let me just go on here. Rand Paul, so offends Cheney that Cheney hasn't merely blessed Grayson, Secretary of State Trey Grayson, who, by the way, is like, he's a former Democrat. Cheney calls Grayson the true conservative, and he's attacking Rand Paul, first-time candidate, who has a lead in the polls early in the campaign, with the sort of language that Cheney usually reserves for trashing liberal Democrats. He said, quote, Cheney, quote, "We need senators who truly understand radical Islam and al-Qaeda and who will work to strengthen our commitment to a strong national defense and to whom this is not just a political game," end quote. And if that wasn't bad enough, former New York mayor and scumsucker without equal, Rudy Giuliani, is also slamming Rand Paul. I love this. I love to watch Republicans do this. I love it. Anyway, why are they against Rand Paul? Well, for one thing, he's his father's son. That starts it right there. Ron Paul represents that old right Republicanism with its disdain for military intervention, including the war in Iraq, and the taste for civil liberties. And that never sat well with the Republican Party's foreign policy establishment, as the nasty wrangling between Ron Paul and Giuliani during the 2007 debates illustrated. But the neocons fretted when the elder Paul's presidential bid claimed the national spotlight, partly by calling into question the Republicans' carefully constructed fantasy that only liberal surrender monkeys oppose unnecessary wars. Well, guess what? Not only did Ron Paul, but his son Rand Paul also opposes unnecessary war. So now the Republican killers are even more worried by the prospects that a Republican senator, that would be Rand Paul, might apply checks and balances to presidential war making. No, really? Rand Paul says the following, quote, "I would have voted no on the Iraq war," end quote. He also says in a videotape or a video posted prominently on his campaign website that he'll push for formal declarations of war with both the House and the Senate before the launch of wars that he even might favor. God, what a radical idea! A declaration of war before we go to war. Rand Paul also says that while national defense is the top responsibility of government, conservatives who are serious about reducing waste must be wary of the excesses of the military-industrial complex. He also is very critical of the Patriot Act, and he seems to have a willingness to cross partisan lines. So now you can see why Rand Paul to Dick Cheney is like a thump in the chest. You know what I'm saying? I can't wait to see what happens tomorrow. It's going to be an absolute hoot. If you want to read this in the current issue, the May 24th issue of The Nation, and because of their publishing deadline, they're pretty far behind the curve. You know, at one time, The Nation was almost like getting a daily newspaper, but with the news cycles now reduced to 5 minutes, most of what you read in The Nation seems a little dated. Did you know that Sarah Palin's first dude, Todd Palin, worked for BP for 18 years? You know that? He was some kind of a polar bear killing, moose shooting executive for BP. That figures, doesn't it? It figures, of course. Also, I heard today that we had April just passed was the warmest or the hottest, take your pick. Hottest April on record since records were kept, and that goes back to 1850. Not only that, but the first 4 months of this year taken together were the warmest in recorded history. Global warming? Nah. All right. It's time for a break? It is. Let's take a break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
To Mike Malloy.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square.
21 past the hour. Steve writes in, I'm an engineer and used to work offshore, admittedly 30 years ago. But when I heard what BP apparently ordered, this is regarding the 60 Minutes, the BP segment from 60 Minutes last night. He said, when I heard what BP apparently ordered, skipping the step of keeping mud, which is a drilling lubricant, debris remover, and weight to keep the pressure contained, skipping the step of keeping mud in the hole, I couldn't believe what I heard and believed I misunderstood what was being said. At first, I thought they hit a high-pressure gas pocket, which is not uncommon. It happened once when I was down there, and the drilling rig burned and sank in a matter of hours. Fortunately, everyone got off the rig in time and no one was hurt. What happened on the horizon was an entirely other order of magnitude in seriousness, though. After the 60-minute story, apparently, I had not misunderstood. I still can't believe it and think there must be some other mitigating circumstance. Some safety, some other new procedure that would keep the pressure contained that I'm not familiar with. If not, I agree. And there's I agree with what I said. And there's a trail back to BP to prove it. There should be criminal charges for negligent homicide at a minimum. Steve. Yeah, but you know as well as I do, Steve, it will never, ever happen. This is a corporate owned former republic. Corporations get away literally with murder, whether it's murdering people, with their pollution, whether it is murdering the economy, with the way they work the numbers and rip people off, whether it's murdering the environment. It doesn't make any difference what they murder. They are home free because they have pig spokesmen like Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh to provide cover for them. And these poor, miserable bastards that call themselves teabaggers or tea partiers or whatever they are continue to eat the vomit that these people put out. They just continue to do it. Damn them. David in Denver writes, Mike, I was listening to Lieberman's hearings today on the oil spill. I didn't know he had some hearings. Well, well, well. And my ears perked up when I heard one of the senators say to the witness, I hate to ask this question, but I have to. What's going to happen to all this oil when a hurricane comes? The president of BP, the witness, gave the answer you would expect. He simply didn't answer. He went on about how BP was aware that hurricane season is coming, and they were doing all they could to stop the flow. I guess that tells us what's going to happen to all the oil is coming ashore. The lame senator, whoever he was, didn't follow up, of course, and moved on to some other line of questioning. By the way, hurricane season starts in the Atlantic on June 1. Hurricane Schmurricane! They don't care! Why would corporate America, in this case BP or whoever, they don't care. Why should they? There is no penalty. There is no penalty for corporate murder. There is no penalty for what they have done in the Gulf of Mexico or in Prudhoe Bay, wherever the Exxon Valdez event occurred. There is never a penalty. There's no penalty for what the U.S. military's nuclear arsenal at Rocky Flats did outside of Denver. There's no penalty. There never is. Corporate America, the sugar industry that has murdered the Everglades, there's no penalty. Nothing. Nothing. And who's left to clean it up? You are. I am. There's no penalty for any of these sons of bitches. Never. Never has been. Never will be. Don't you get that? Of course you get that. Why don't these half-witted teabaggers get that? You psychopaths, and you still argue in favor of corporate America. In favor of corporate America. There's no penalty. Ever. The savings and loan. How many people died? How many people whose entire lives were tied up in SNL stock or in savings? And when the Republicans stole everything they could get, Keating and McCain and the Bush bastard and all these people just stole everything. Who suffered? Oh, Keating went to jail for what? 32 months or something? Corporate America never pays for, it doesn't matter what they do. Environmental degradation, pollute the planet, kill people. Injure people, let a goddamn mine collapse. It doesn't matter. It's corporate America. They never pay. You pay. We'll be right back.
Nothing you can't measure anymore. The blizzard, of the world has crossed the threshold.
Flying monkey free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. The Sun Sentinel in Miami is reporting that the giant oil slick now appears to be entering the loop current, which flows into or is part of the Gulf Current. What is it called? What's the Gulf Current called? Not the loop part. Gulf Stream. Thank you. I just couldn't think of that. Anyway, excuse me. The Sun Sentinel in Miami says now the giant oil slick in the Gulf appears to be entering a loop current likely to carry polluted water to the Atlantic. The world is learning that offshore spills pose widespread threats far beyond a damaged well. The current spill near Louisiana poses a danger to the Florida Keys, the southeast coast from Miami to West Palm Beach, as far north as coastal North Carolina. That's because the powerful loop current, which turns into the Gulf Stream, routinely carries debris of all kinds from the Gulf up the Atlantic coast. In conjunction with that, scientists now, did you hear about this over the weekend? There's a ship called the Pelican. It's a research vessel, and it was in the area of where this BP caused disaster occurred. It was preparing. First of all, it houses up to 16 scientists from multiple universities, and it was preparing to conduct deep water coral studies when it was called in to research the spill. Another science vessel was recently sent to the spill site, bringing the total to 2. Anyway, this vessel in the Gulf discovered up to 4 underwater plumes of oil Saturday. This is what you were telling me about. Kathy heard this before I did. 4 underwater plumes of oil trailing from the BP disaster. And the discovery of these plumes strengthens what we've talked about on this program from a couple of sources, one of which I found to be suspect because he's one of these birther freaks and also some kind of a rapturist Christian jackleg. But he also he wrote a couple of pieces, both of which I read on this program. So this strengthens the claim in discovering these plumes that the spill, the gusher, is spewing far more oil than reported by the government or BP. The largest of the plumes was reported to have a volume of 1.7 cubic miles. That's 1.7 every direction, right? Is that what that means? No, it means something times something times something. I don't care. It's huge. And it trails 30 miles southwest into the Gulf of Mexico. It's 1.7 cubic miles in volume, and it trails 30 miles into the Gulf of Mexico. The findings bolster the claim of scientists and captains who stress the dangers of submerged oil traveling long distances with ocean currents. This discovery on Saturday weakens the claims of the U.S. government and BP that most of the oil had risen to the surface. Jesus Christ, we debunked that, what, a week ago? With only negligible amounts underwater. Officials have used this assumption as the basis of their claim that the spill was only leaking 5,000 barrels of oil per day because they based it on surface photographs. Now, that's what that guy Noel, the birther, the rapture weirdo, that's what he wrote in the two pieces that I read on this program. He said, look, you're kidding yourself if you think that crap on the surface represents what this gusher really is. Okay. On Thursday night, last Thursday night, National Public Radio reported claims by several scientists that the Deepwater Horizon spill was 14 times worse than officially reported, releasing 70,000 barrels per day and putting it in the running for the worst oil spill in history. Noel and some of these other people say it's much worse than that. The 70,000 barrels per day gusher is just a starting point. Richard Steiner, former professor of marine conservation, University of Alaska, said, quote, I don't know if the government is willfully misleading the people or they just don't know what they're doing, but I suspect the former. They're trying to cover up for the inadequate response by the federal government, just like BP has been trying to cover up for its own negligence, end quote. BP said on Saturday that it will resume the use of dispersants underwater to prevent oil from reaching the surface. Why? After winning approval for the use of these toxic chemicals, which we've been told now by how many people is worse than the oil. They got approval from the EPA. Dispersants, which may be as toxic as crude oil, have been a major part of BP's program to downplay public consciousness of the spill by keeping most of it hidden underwater. These sons of bitches, see, this is what I'm talking about. Why are not the executives of BP put on trial for negligent homicide at least? I would start with second-degree murder. I guess it can't be first-degree murder, can it? Second-degree murder. Despite the immense quantity of oil that has sunk to the bottom of the ocean through the use of dispersants or never made it to the surface in the first place, surprising little effort has been done to study submerged oil. I'm quoting from Andre Damon, writing at WSWS.org. The research vessel Pelican, which found the plume, was the first research ship to arrive at the spill site, but it only set sail on May 3rd, 2 weeks after the disaster. Steiner said, quote, that's 2 weeks of vital and unprecedented data that was completely lost, end quote. Steiner said, the Pelican happened to hit that particular plume, the first one, but I suspect there are many, many more. At different water depths, the plumes will likely be going in different directions. They have only looked at one or two dimensions so far. There is an immense impact that is almost completely unstudied. End quote. I mean, how much of this can you take, Truth Seeker? I don't know how much I can take. Steinert added that he had told the NOAA, the Coast Guard, and other officials to assign more boats to track underwater oil, but they failed to do so. Steinert said, quote, the federal government was as unprepared for this as BP was. There was simply no contingency plan. Now, BP, their executives, are lying bastards. That's what capitalism is. It's a lie. It's a complete lie. Everything they say is a lie. They're like Republicans. They're like Catholic priests. Everything they say is a lie. A complete lie. And either Obama is being very disingenuous or he bought into the lies. Remember right before the disaster when he said that offshore drilling I'm paraphrasing, but he was talking about how safe offshore drilling was. Not to worry. The technology was so advanced that very seldom. Yeah, well, very seldom came up and bit you on the ass, didn't it, Mr. President? Among Gulf Coast fishing and charter boat captains, the existence of such plumes was widely assumed. Chris Henderson, a charter boat captain in Venice, Louisiana, said in an interview last Wednesday, that he expected that the use of dispersants, which sink oil from the surface into the depths of the ocean, would produce just such a phenomenon. He said, quote, the ocean currents beneath the water are much stronger than they are at the top. And the oil that's still submerged is going to travel in big streams. The submerged oil can pop up anywhere when it hits warm water. And wherever that happens, people are going to be in for a surprise. End quote. Now, just a little more here. This is educating me as well as I hope you're getting some information, because you're not going to get this on ABC or NBC or CBS. The plumes, which are likely composed of a semi-buoyant, emulsified mixture of oil and cold water, are toxic to any animals, including plankton and crustaceans, which come into direct contact. But scientists are worried that once the plumes rise closer to the surface where they can be digested by aerobic bacteria, they will deplete the oxygen in the surrounding water and create huge dead zones, suffocating marine animals who come into contact with them. You know, whales and porpoises and fish. And we'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Our leaders gave them cash. They thought they could exploit them for their subterranean stash. When rulers kill their people, our leaders say it's of no concern to us. As long as we get our hands on that greasy, slimy stuff. For the love of oil, we lost 4,000 people. For the love of oil, how many more will die? For the love of oil, we're roasting our green planet. It's not worth all the tears I've had to cry.
C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
Mother, do you think she's good enough? Mother, do you think she's dangerous?
Nine before the hour. anyway, back to this about the scientists detecting this miles-long streaks, these so-called flumes of oil. Even as these findings are coming out, BP, the U.S. government, and the media have continued to downplay the significance of the spill. There have been a continual series of editorials and news stories published seeking to quiet public outrage over the event. Among the most egregious was a May 3rd New York Times analysis entitled, quote, Gulf oil spill is bad, but how bad, end quote. The latest effort comes from an article in the Washington Post, which seeks to paint the spill in harmony with nature. After noting the significant quantities of oil leaked naturally into the Gulf of Mexico before this explosion, the article in the Washington Post ends by bizarrely hinting that the oil spill has an upside, and that is coral will grow on the sunken rig. That's in the Washington Post. The article says, quote, less than a mile from the uncapped well, now upside down is the hulk of the Deepwater Horizon rig. It is now, in effect, an artificial reef destined to become another Garden of the Deep. That's what the Washington Post is saying. When he read that passage, Steiner exclaimed, the guy from the University of Alaska, quote, that is some of the most twisted logic I have ever heard, end quote. He added that even though millions of gallons of oil are released into the Gulf every year, both through natural seeps and chronic pollution, they are broken down by sunlight and bacteria relatively quickly because they exist in such small quantities. But the concentrations of oil now snaking their way through the Gulf of Mexico will simply kill everything they come into contact with. Steiner said, quote, there's no way around it. With this amount of toxic oil, millions of organisms already have been killed, end quote. (sighs) Meanwhile, BP succeeded Sunday in inserting a suction tube into one section of the leaking drill pipe. After an initial failure, the company said it began funneling oil and methane out through the pipe and into a larger tank or tanker on the surface. And what did I hear tonight? They're getting 2% of it? 2%. Well, see, they'll make money.
They claimed it was a fifth of it, but that was based on their original erroneous figures of only
5,000 gallons, right.
Barrels.
Right. Oh, man. I don't know. It's really bad, and it continues to get worse. What? Somebody sent me an email that said whales and dolphins don't breathe underwater, if that cheers you up. Duh! Really? Oh, my God. I thought whales and dolphins breathe underwater.
But you know, they eat fish.
Yeah, never mind. I get the damnedest emails on this program. Never mind.
Food that does breathe underwater, but
Joel writes, Mike, you probably already gotten a dozen emails about this, but here goes anyway. The oxygen depletion in the water caused by oil-eating aerobic bacteria will not directly suffocate marine mammals such as whales, dolphins, porpoises, and so on. They are air-breathing animals just as terrestrial mammals are, and oxygen depletion in the water won't affect their own respiration. Why do people think I'm so stupid?
But then it'll kill the thing.
Well, he goes on.
Starve to death.
The oxygen depletion will do is kill off their food supply, fish, krill, and other aerobic creatures that are water breathers. And of course, the oil itself is highly toxic to marine mammals, just as it is to terrestrial animals, humans included. Whatever the details, it ain't looking good. Joel. No, it's not, Joel. It's looking about as bad as anything could possibly be. I hate to keep talking about it because it's horror. It's talking about horror stuff. This is like talking about the U.S. Army summarily executing people in Afghanistan if they can't prove that they're not. How do you prove you're not something? How do you do that? How do you prove a negative? And like Seymour Hersh said, and I may play that sound clip for you again. Seymour Hersh at a conference in Global Investigative Journalism conference in Geneva, Switzerland, about 3 weeks ago, said that U.S. soldiers are engaged in battlefield executions in Afghanistan if people can't prove they're not Taliban. How do you prove you're not something? You know, I'm not a snail eater. How do I prove that? How do I prove I'm not a... Does somebody bring me a plate of snails and I go, no, thank you, and that's the proof? All right, we have another break here. We'll come back and don't call right now, but when we come back this next hour, we will take some phone calls. There's just a couple more things I want to cover, though, before we do it. And let's play the Cy Hersh thing again. All right? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. That's ironic, that line. Listen to the tide slowly turning, wash all our heartaches away. Yeah, welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. We're talking about the extinction level event that's occurring in the Gulf of Mexico. Marcus is in Germany, in Munich, and he writes, "Hi, Mike. It's much worse than people may think. There already are dead zones in the Gulf from the fertilizer dumped by the Mississippi River. You are only experiencing a tip of the iceberg," says Peter Ward, professor of biology, earth and space sciences, and adjunct professor of astronomy at the University of Washington in Seattle. He is principal investigator of the University of Washington node of the NASA Astrobiology Institute. Woo! He says, quote, "It cannot have hit in a worse place, as we're dealing with a body of water that doesn't have a great deal of circulation on the bottom. The Gulf already has experienced dead zones where oxygen is removed from the water and bottom life has been killed off. Thus, the oil can't be broken up and destroyed by bacteria that would otherwise be growing there." End quote. "Furthermore, the Gulf area contains thousands of streams. The oil will go up into those streams and sink into the mud, and there's no easy way to clean it. And that with the increase rise of sea levels, the oil would be pushed inward." I'm not sure I understand that last part, Marcus, but that's okay. It's just a disaster. Just an incredible, unmitigated disaster. From Sphinx, regarding the Gulf oil spill, Sphinx writes, "This just might turn into an extinction-level event, especially when you tie it into what is going on with the volcanic activity in Iceland. I'm not trying to be an alarmist, but before going any further, Mike, would you please Wikipedia CoreXit, C-O-R-E-X-I-T, C-O-R-E-X-I-T. Wikipedia explains that this chemical is, what this chemical is, and what it is used for, and when it was last used in the 1989 Exxon Valdez spill in Alaska. CoreXit comes in two flavors, EC9500A and EC9527A, both of which are very toxic to the liver, respiratory, nervous system, kidneys, and causes blood disorders. In addition, the oil company says that this chemical dispersant is not as toxic as the crude oil. The questions I have for you are these. What is going to happen in the Gulf region and up and down Hurricane Alley when hurricane season arrives in June? Does crude oil and seawater mixed with the chemical dispersant increase the temperature of the water? If the temperature of the water is increased, what effect will that have on the hurricanes this season? What about the tropical storms, tornadoes, and what happens during evaporation? Is the oil and the dispersants taken up into the clouds with the water? If so, will it rain oil and or dispersants in the manner of acid rain? Will the hurricane spew this toxic soup up and down the south and east coast, leaving behind a toxic chemical sludge on streets, buildings, vehicles, etc., and causing death and destruction? Holy jumping Jesus. Oh, he's taking the Lord's name in vain. You suppose we'll be safe in the mountains?
I guess it depends on that loop current.
Chris Hedges has one at commondreams.org. Go to commondreams.org and read this one. BP and the Little Eichmanns by Chris Hedges. I just want to read a little bit. Cultures that do not recognize that human life and the natural world have a sacred dimension, an intrinsic value beyond monetary value, cannibalize themselves until they die. These cultures ruthlessly exploit the natural world and the members of their society in the name of progress until exhaustion or collapse, blind to the fury of their own self-destruction. The oil pouring into the Gulf of Mexico, estimated to be perhaps as much as 100,000 barrels a day, is part of our foolish death march. It is one more blow delivered by the corporate state, the trade of life for gold. But this time, collapse, when it comes, will not be confined to the geography of a decayed civilization. He means ours. It'll be global. Those who carry out this global genocide, men like BP's chief executive Tony Hayward, who assures us that the Gulf of Mexico is a very big ocean. The amount of oil and dispersant we are putting into it is tiny in relation to the total water volume. Are, to steal a line from Ward Churchill, little Eichmanns. They serve Thanatos, the forces of death. The dark instinct Sigmund Freud identified within human beings that propels us to annihilate all living things, including ourselves. These deformed individuals, like Tony Hayward, lack the capacity for empathy. They are at once banal and dangerous. They possess the peculiar ability to organize vast, destructive bureaucracies and yet remain blind to the ramifications. The death they dispense, whether in the pollutants and carcinogens that have made cancer an epidemic, the dead zone rapidly being created in the Gulf of Mexico, the melting polar ice caps, or the deaths last year of 45,000 Americans who could not afford proper medical care, is all part of the cold and rational exchange of life for money. The corporations and those who run them consume, pollute, oppress, and kill. The little Eichmanns who manage them reside in a parallel universe of staggering wealth, luxury, and splendid isolation that rivals that of the closed court of Versailles. You can read the rest of this at commondreams.org, BP and the little Eichmanns. And if you don't know what he's referring to there, Ward Churchill, the professor at the University of Colorado, who was ripped to pieces because an essay that he had written several years ago, subsequent to the 9/11 destruction of the World Trade Centers, he referred to the people who were working in the World Trade Center, some of them as little Eichmanns, people presiding over a completely unfeeling exploitation of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, by the manipulation of money, capital. And he was severely attacked for that. Well, little Eichmanns. Eichmann, you know, was the Adolf Eichmann was the mechanic who put together the necessary machinery to murder 6 million Jews and a couple 3 million other different groups in the service of the German Wehrmacht. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Little piggies crawling in the dirt, and for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirt? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around with.
and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Twenty-one past the hour. Okay, in case you missed it the first time, I want to play this for you again. On April 22nd, Cy Hirsch, the investigative journalist who broke the Abu Ghraib story, he broke the My Lai story, he spoke to an audience at the Global Investigative Journalism Conference in Geneva, Switzerland, and he told the audience there that U.S. soldiers are engaged in battlefield executions in Afghanistan. I want you to hear it in his own words.
And I'll tell you right now, one of the great tragedies of my country is that Mr. Obama is looking the other way, because equally horrible things are happening to prisoners, I mean, to those we capture in Afghanistan. They're being executed in the battlefield. It's unbelievable stuff going on there that doesn't necessarily get reported. And things don't change. What they've done in the field now is they tell the troops, you have to make a determination within a day or two or so whether or not the prisoners you have, the detainees, are Taliban. And you must extract whatever tactical intelligence you can get, as opposed to strategic long-range intelligence, immediately. And if you cannot conclude they're Taliban, you must turn them free. What it means is, and this is, I've been told this anecdotally by five or six different people, battlefield executions are taking place. What if they can't prove they're Taliban? Bam. If we don't do it ourselves, we turn them over to the nearby Afghan troops, and by the time we walk 3 feet, the bullets are flying. And that's going on now.
That's going on now. So anybody who wants to talk about how good a job Barack Obama's doing, remember, this is Obama's war now. This is Obama's war, even though these rabid dogs in the Bush crime family started it. It's Obama's. We got time to do this? You sure? All right, Busta Rhymes. I used to play this as kind of a joke. Not anymore.
Daddy, what's it gonna be like?
Well, sweetheart, for your sake, I hope it'll be all peaches and cream. But I'm afraid the end time is near. The cataclysmic apocalypse referred to in the scriptures of every holy book known to mankind. It will be an era fraught with boundless greed and corruption, where global monetary systems disintegrate, leaving brother to kill brother for a grain of overcooked rice. The nations of the civilized world will collapse under the oppressive weight of parasitic political conspiracies which remove all hope and optimism from their once faithful citizens. Around the globe, generations of polluters will be punished for their sins, unshielded by the ozone layer they have successfully depleted, left to bake in the searing naked rays of light. Wholesale assassination served to destabilize every remaining government, leaving the starving and wicked to fend for themselves. Bloodthirsty renegade cyborgs created by tax-dodging corporations wreak havoc. Pissed off androids tired of being slaves to a godless and gutless system where the rich get richer, unleash total worldwide destruction by means of nuclear holocaust, annihilating the terrified masses, leaving in its torturous wake nothing but vicious, cannibalistic, mutated, radiated, and horribly disfigured hordes of satanic killers bent on revenge, but against whom? There are so few left alive. Starvation reigns supreme, forcing unlucky survivors to eat anything and anyone in their path. Massive earthquakes crack the planet's crust like a hollow eggshell, causing unending volcanic eruptions. The creatures of the seven seas, unable to escape to certain death upon land, boil in their liquid prison. Disease encircles the earth. Plagues and viruses with no known cause or cure, laying waste to whatever draws breath. And humankind, having proven itself to be nothing more than a race of ruthless scavengers, fall victim to merciless attack at the hands of interplanetary alien tribes who seek to conquer our charred remains. This is extinction level event.
Wow, that's cool. I can't hardly wait.
You don't have to, because here it is. Because here it is. Because here it is. Because here it is.
No banana boat song. Good God. Yeah, you know, 5-6 years ago, we would occasionally play that. Maybe 7 years ago, when it became apparent that the absolute destruction of this Democratic Republic was underway, I mean really underway, and being assisted this time, really assisted by the administration in power, Bush and Cheney, and that they were cultivating scum, filthy, 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 traitorous scum inside our own country, like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh, to facilitate this breakdown, this end. But I used to play that as kind of a hoot. And it's amazing to me how it has exited the hoot world and entered into the real world in such a short period of time. We'll be right back. It's about 25 before the hour. Cindy sent me a couple of stories here about the resignation of Chris Oines. And she sent me a picture of him. Why do so many of these right-wingers look so porcine? All of them look like, they look like Limbaugh, like huge breeding sows. And this guy, Chris Oines, was the associate director of offshore energy and minerals and management at the Minerals Management Service, the MMS. He's decided to retire at the end of this month, according to the Washington Post. This is the son of a bitch who was in charge of giving the offshore drilling companies anything they wanted, while at the same time, ostensibly, he was supposed to be protecting the Gulf, the American people, the fishing industry. It says here, according to the Washington Post, Oines, who oversaw oil and gas leasing in the Gulf of Mexico for 12 years before being promoted Associate Director for Offshore Energy and Minerals Management, has come under fire for being too close to the industry officials he regulated. Oh, no, really? Did that happen? The Post reports that Oines made the announcement today. Oines was promoted to Associate Director despite his role in a foul-up, so-called, at the MMS Regional Office in New Orleans. During his tenure at the Gulf Regional Office in Louisiana, Oines played a central role in an offshore leasing follow-up that cost taxpayers an estimated $10 billion in lost revenue. The Interior Department's Inspector General called the matter, quote, a dropping example of bureaucratic bungling, end quote. Despite that, the agency's then-director promoted Mr. Oines in 2007 to associate director for the offshore program. Who was president in 2007? See, this is what we talked about, because we found it in an article by several writers who understood the Washington scene, what was going on. The Bush-Cheney crime family promoted or put into positions of key power thousands of these filthy pigs, thousands of them. Okay, hundreds. No, thousands. They're all over inside the government. So, well, we can place at Obama's desk the responsibility for battlefield executions, because he is the commander-in-chief. It's pretty difficult to place the responsibility for these swine that the Bush crime family stuck into positions all over the bureaucracy before they left. We can't blame that on Obama. Trying to find these pig bastards, trying to sort them, to go through the entire civil service sector and find the scum who were put there by Bush and Cheney to kill the planet, to kill the I mean, Bush, I don't think Bush really was aware. He just did what he was told. Kind of like Reagan, only much, much worse. But Cheney, this foul-breathed, evil bastard Cheney, who engineered all of this, and his incubus, Karl Rove, and all these demons that clustered at his feet. I mean, these people really, if I believed in the supernatural, Cheney and his crew are truly out of the depths of some perverse hell. Not your standard hell, but a perverse hell. So this pig is now going to resign, huh? He's now going to resign. He should be tried, read his rights, arrested, tried, convicted, and shot. I mean that. How many people have to die? How much of the planet has to be destroyed before we, who put up with this every time, say enough? GR, our Hopi correspondent in Arizona, writes, you do realize that the prophecy, the Hopi prophecy on the coming end of the civilization, has in it this brief statement. This is from Hopi Indian prophecy. The sea will die. When the Hopi stop dancing in mid-ceremony up on the mesa, run for the high ground. It's coming. Also mentioned in Hopi prophecy, man will create gourds of ashes which will rain on the earth, burning both men, beasts, and all plants in terrible storms of fire. Man will throw a house into the sky and people will live there for a time. Space station. Most of all, man will be faced with the choice to return to caring for the earth and all things, or to continue the destructive path of greed. And GR writes, what do you think they'll do? Well, the observations of native peoples, I don't call it religion, because that prostitutes and perverts what native peoples or so-called indigenous peoples, you know, the people who really lived in harmony. I don't care if they were in Australia or the Middle East or the American Turtle Island or someplace in Canada. It doesn't make any difference. But the primitive, isn't that what we call them? The primitive peoples who understood the connection between humans and the natural world. Isn't it interesting how we differentiate between humans and the natural world? Huh? The indigenous peoples who realized that humans were part of the natural world, and to divorce oneself from the natural world was to begin to destroy the natural world. And apparently, up to this point, irreversible process. And you know what it is? You know why people are not running into the street with their hair on fire over this? Why people will still spend time listening to these pig bastards like Beck and Hannity and Limbaugh and the rest of them? It's because it's not affecting our little sphere, you know? I mean, we still get up in the morning and we can breathe the air in our bedrooms. And, you know, we go to the bathroom and take a leak and you flush the toilet and it still flushes on out. It goes somewhere, but it's gone. And we go downstairs and turn on the faucet and fill up the coffee pot and it makes coffee. Everything's normal. And we fix the kids' breakfast and, we get them off to school and the bus shows up, or we put them in the car and we drive on to school. Everything seems normal. Everything seems normal. What are they talking about on the TV? What is CNN talking about? 5,000 gallons or barrels or ounces or something spewing into the Gulf. Well, that doesn't affect me. That doesn't affect me. Look! My roses have bloomed. The azaleas came out. That's why it has that unreal quality, right, Truth Seeker? That unreal quality. No, this is not happening. How could it be happening? I don't see anything. Here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains today, the day started a little bit cloudy, a little bit humid, but then it kind of blew away, didn't it, Kathy? And the humidity fell, and it was really a pretty day today. 82 degrees, I think, around 82 degrees. On our walk today, our four-mile walk, we walked by our little neighborhood swimming pool that we filled up about a week ago. Those of us who work on the pool committee filled it up with water and put in the appropriate chlorine and the, you know, the acid. Everything's balanced, and we walk by the pool and we look through the fence, and oh my goodness, it just looks so sparkly and blue. And I can't wait to get in there and start swimming laps, because this walking in the humidity is really getting to us, and everything looks so normal. And either I or Kathy go to pick up our kid at the end of kindergarten every day, and Molly gets in the car and she shows us the picture she drew and the writing she did and the coloring, and she sits down and in the car and, you know, has her juice. Netherlands. Um, Mike, I listened to your Thursday show this evening as you were talking about the oil volcano and all the universities and professionals eager to help, trying to stop the gusher or clean up the oil, but were being blocked by BP. I remember a news item I saw already about 1.5 or 2 weeks ago. The news broadcasts about the disaster here in the Netherlands, for the most part, are as shallow and underreporting as yours probably is. But they had these two professionals on, one from a company that had advanced techniques with which to scoop up the oil out of the sea. The other was from a dredging company involved in creating these artificial islands off the coast of Dubai and such. They said they were capable of creating sandbars off the Delta coast so the oil wouldn't penetrate that fragile area. He's talking about the Mississippi Delta. Both had offered their help and were standing by in case they were asked, but they were refused. The dredging company guys said they could be operational in 2 weeks' time. That would have been about now. If I listen to all the news you gather and report about this disaster, it seems unlikely that that's going to happen. But I thought I'd mail it to you so you can print it out, read it, maybe tell your audience about it, then crumple it up and toss it away with a Malloy signature sigh. Keep it up. We're listening. Frederick. I forgot to take calls tonight. Oh, well, from William in Hollywood. Mike, I can't take much more of the insanity. We never get the truth about anything. This oil gusher has been so distorted by so many corporations that the truth will never be told. It don't mean nothing. Nothing at all. I stole that line from the movie Hamburger Hill. Since this is how now I see it all. It does mean something, but not when the people are lied to always, and the results of this disaster may take decades to be realized. It's real reassuring to know that some toxin released into the water or air or ground by some mindless corporate freak over decades may very well be the end of some working class hero's life. What a effed up country. What a effed up world. William from Hollywood. P.S. Nowhere to move right now. Everything is effed up. And from Kay, Mike, this has nothing to do with education or anything political, but I had to vent about this to someone who gets it. Over the weekend, a friend of ours shared a story of how he narrowly escaped a major traffic accident. The person driving on the freeway in front of him careened out of control and crashed, but this friend didn't. And now he credits God with watching over him. Excuse me, but where was God regarding the driver in front of him who crashed? Does this guy ever think about what he is saying and how completely self-absorbed it sounds? Are we to believe that God saved him, but evidently couldn't be bothered with the other guy? Whiskey Tango Foxtrot? Or how about this one? A friend of mine has been struggling with depression. Not sadness, not the blues, but depression. And what kind of advice is she getting? Hang in there. Tomorrow will be better. Things always look better in the morning. When you're dealing with depression, I'm sorry, but it won't get better tomorrow. Not without help. I believe that this kind of magical thinking is part of the reason why corporations like BP and Halliburton get away with such monumental crimes again and again and again. Oh, it looks like a tragedy today, but wait until tomorrow. Things will be looking up. Or even more galling, don't fret, God is in control. I just can't take it anymore that so many people apparently believe that God intervenes for them while he turns his back on millions of others. Or that we should step back from environmental crises because God is in control of things like global warming. Well, it's just more evidence of the shallowness of the American mind. Our national anthem really should be changed to Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy. Okay. I'll tell you what's going to happen tonight with all these primaries around the country. The Democrats are going to stay home because the core of the Democratic Party is sick of being lied to. I don't think we have... Do we have a primary here? I don't think we do, do we? No. Democrats are going to stay home. The Republicans are going to fight with the teabaggers. There's so many instances where I hope the teabaggers win, because they will not win come the general election. But this will utterly and absolutely destroy this filthy, corrupt, disgusting teabag, or I'm sorry, Republican Party. And then the teabag lunatics can be destroyed. So we will watch and report by the time we come on the air tomorrow night. A lot of these contests will have been decided. Sorry for a bummer program again tonight. Set out the buttermilk, Kathy, and let's go home. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.